Craig McMullen, Jim DeVos, Tony Giles, and Doug Cummings, assistant directors, Kent Comedina and Pat Barber, I believe. And I believe we also have our assistant attorneys general on the line as well, Linda Pollock and John LaSquare, and several other staff.
Thank you. I think with that, we're ready to start on item number one.
Mr. Chairman, let me read a quick intro here. I think all the commissioners have identified themselves, so we don't need to do a roll call. We have all five in attendance. This meeting is being webcast to enable the public to view the proceedings online. However, the webcast is not interactive. Members of the public may view the meeting at www.azgfd.gov/commissioncam, or may listen to the meeting by calling 602-666-0783. The access code is 280046234#. I believe all those instructions are on the on our website as well. So also, as well as any copies of presentations that will be discussed during the meeting, I think are available there. I would like to announce that we'll be operating off an agenda, revision number one, dated April 15th, 2020. For the benefit of the public, again, agendas are available and located at the department's website. There will be no public comment at this meeting. And with that, Mr. Chairman, we can move to item number one, which is consideration of proposed Commission Order 7 and an amendment to Commission Order 2 for the 2020 hunting seasons. Our presenter is Amber Munig, Big Game Management Program Supervisor.
Good morning, Amber. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. This is an interesting way to present. So today I will be presenting the hunt recommendations for the 2020 bighorn sheep hunts and a couple amendments for the 2020 deer hunts. The Commission approved guidelines in September of 2017, and these hunt recommendations are based on those guidelines. The guidelines will be used through the spring of 2020 seasons. Most of our fall big game recommendations were approved as part of a two-year cycle package in April of 2019. Pronghorn elk, fall turkey, and spring turkey were approved in December for 2 years. Deer, javelina, bison, bear, and small game recommendations were presented last April for 2 years. Just as a refresher, hunt recommendations, this is a multi-tiered process. It starts with our hunt guidelines. We incorporate population surveys, our hunter harvest surveys, and then social information. The recommendations are made for 2 years for most species, and then those recommendations result in the three regulation booklets that we produce every year. And this is a process that starts with our wildlife managers. It continues through our terrestrial wildlife specialists in the regions, including the program managers, and then the big and small game programs at a statewide level. Commission Order 7, Bighorn Sheep. This is a really interesting picture. I don't know if you can see it, but this was taken through a scope by one of our volunteers, and they're rams on Picacho Mountain, which is our new release that we did 2 years ago. So for bighorn sheep, we manage for 15 to 25% of the harvest of the estimated class 3 and 4 rams in a population. A class 3 ram starts at age 6 and then up. The average score for bighorn sheep in Arizona has remained high at about the 164-165 rate or score. The regulation format will continue to include the desert and bighorn sheep or desert and rocky labeling. It'll have separation of the extremely difficult hunts, and that's mainly in the Superstition Wilderness and Units 46A and 46B. And any special regulations are highlighted, and these are usually specific to extremely difficult areas, more so than normal, since every hunt area for bighorn sheep is difficult. But it also includes those special regulations on some of our hunts that occur on DOD lands. Specific changes include increases in units 12A or 12B East, 42, 44A South, the 43B, which is the Trigo Mountains, 44A West, 45B, 45C, and then 27 South, 28 North Hunt. Decreases are in units 910, 45A, and the Black River Hunt area in Unit 27, 1 and 27. The Unit 9, this is a unit that we're rotating every other year with one and two permits, and so this year it reverts back to a single hunt, which will be October 1 through December 31st. In Units 15A, B East, 15C North, and 15C South, we are recommending that the season length increase by a month, so it would start on November 1st and run through December 31st. This is to provide extra opportunity in an area where the populations are very low density, and that's partly a result of the disease that moved through there several years back. And also, because these populations are so dispersed, we want to provide hunters the best opportunity to actually locate the animals. In Unit 43B, we're recommending stratifying that hunt into 2 3-week seasons with 4 permits each. This is an overall increase of 3 permits in this unit. It's doing tremendously right now. And then in the Black River hunt area, we're recommending expanding that hunt area to include areas where the bighorn sheep are wandering out to and from. In Unit 37A, we are recommending, this is outside of guidelines, but we are recommending a stratified 3-hunt season. The 3 seasons will overlap, and each hunt will have 2 permits. This is the Silverbell Mountains, which is the main complex. We also have the Watermans in here, and the core of the bighorn sheep are in those 2 mountain complexes. In 2019, we offered 2 hunts with 3 permits each, and there were concerns expressed for crowding in those areas. Most hunters harvest within the first week of their hunt. If they're not, they're usually targeting a specific animal and or a specific size of an animal and hunting longer. This calendar shows how the overlap will work. The first season will have 2 weeks to themselves, and then the third week will be overlapped with the second season. The second season will only have 1 week where they have the hunt to themselves, which is the middle, and then the third week of their hunt will overlap with the first week of the third season. For bighorn sheep, you are certifying the hunts as provided to the commission in the commission memo and what we posted on our website. There was a bonus point only option. There are desert permits for 107, which is an increase of 7 from last year. No change for Rocky Mountain permits at 16 for a total of 123 permits statewide. I have a recommendation when the commission is ready.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, the department recommends the commission vote to approve Commission Order 7, Bighorn Sheep for the 2020 season as presented.
All in favor?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Commissioner Davis.
The Hunt Guidelines Subcommittee of Commissioner Zeiler and Commissioner Davis met to go through the recommendations and support the department recommendation.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, Jim Guggenhauer here. And first of all, thank you, Amber, for all the great work and the recommendation. I know that you've been fielding a bunch of letters regarding 44A West in the sheep area over there. And there does seem to be some question about the surveys, the timing of the surveys, and maybe the depths of the survey. I wonder if you could comment a little bit how you collected that data and the process to get the 2 tags in that area.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Guggenhauer, the department surveys bighorn sheep every 3 years. We did survey Unit 44A West in October of 2019. On survey, we saw 7 Class 3 and 4 rams at an observation rate of about 62%. When you expand that survey based on your observation rate, it suggests there are 12 class 3 and possibly 12 class 3 and 4 rams in the population. We also manage for 15% of the harvest in that unit. Tags be offered for 15% of the class 3 and 4 rams. That equals 1.8 rams to be harvested. And so the department rounds up at, when we get to 1 point, at 0.7, the department rounds up to the next level of permits. And so we rounded up to 2. This is a unit that surveys are often hit or miss on what we see during the survey. We had a really good survey this year. We do not cover 100% of the unit, but we cover the significant portions of bighorn sheep habitat. And the population estimate is only based on the habitat that's actually surveyed. Some years we see sheep in here and some years we don't. But we did actually physically see those rams, and most of them were in lower elevation areas when we did see them.
Right. Thank you, Amber. So there, at least according to the letters that we were getting, and I know all the commissioners saw the letters and some telephone calls regarding this, and it seems like there might be some issue between the timing of the surveys and when the hunt actually occurs, i.e. you talk about some of the sheep moving to the north into another game management unit. Is that a possibility that that's happening?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Guggenhauer, movement of animals is always possible. We believe that there is connection between 16A and the southern portion of 16A. There's nothing to prevent them from crossing the Bill Williams River in most years. But the department is confident and comfortable with the permit allocation as recommended.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion.
Please proceed.
Okay. We did receive several letters and phone calls regarding the sheep tags in 44A West, so I would move that the commission approve the hunt guidelines as presented, with the exception of Game Management Unit 44A West, where we maintain the one sheep tag for this current year and for the hunt on December 1st through the 31st.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Brake. I second that motion.
Mr. Chairman, before we vote, I'd like to explain my vote.
Yes, Commissioner Davis, go ahead.
I appreciate the motion of Commissioner Guggenhauer, and I received and went through those letters as well in with detail, and understand the some of the issues presented in the letter. On the other hand, the commission has, and it looks for increasing opportunity whenever possible. And we've had a lot of discussion about sheep hunts and the potential of increasing some tags here and there. And so I, as a member of the Hunt Recommendation Subcommittee, where I'm confident that 1 to 2 isn't going to disproportionately alter the opportunity in 44. But I also do, you know, obviously respect my fellow commissioners that made the motion and second it. I just wanted to explain that I will vote no, but with an understanding that I do understand, I do get their issues. This is a gray area matter for me, but I'm comfortable with the department's recommendation, so I'll vote no.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, go ahead. Brake,
thank you, Commissioner Davis. My thought is I'm very uncomfortable by adding a tag by 0.1%. And I feel that there are people who wrote those letters that are very concerned, and I think probably every one of them is looking out for the health of that particular herd. So if it had been a little bit more than 0.1%, that would have been much more easier for me to do that, particularly if there had been those letters. But that is the reason that I have seconded the motion. And I also, I respect the amount of time that the subcommittee spent on that. I know that it takes a lot of their time, and by no means is my vote to cast any dispersions upon all the work that they did. Thank you.
Understood.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Guiler.
Go ahead, sir.
When you look at the 44 unit in totality, and the area that the aerial surveys are done, it is very difficult for department personnel to look at the vast areas, especially in the lowlands, where these sheep migrate during the post-rut periods. Having hunted sheep in the past and watched the migration that we saw in Unit 46 and Unit 45 over the last several years, there are areas in the 44 West unit, in particular the western side of the unit, that don't get the aerial surveys. That area is prime sheep habitat, as anyone saw during our Parker Commission meetings that drove up the river. And so that is the reason that I am voting in favor of what the department has put together, because of the areas that we have not had eyes, so to speak, on the ground. The other thing that I would bring up to my fellow commissioners, with all due respect, is that south of Unit 44, we have an opportunity in the Hidden Shores area down in Unit 43B to translocate those rams that are living on a golf course and those ewes into that zone in the west side of the unit. Looking at our population numbers of, you know, anywhere from 40 to 65 sheep in the area, such a vast and remote area is prime habitat for having a population in the neighborhood of 150 to 200 plus animals. So I think there's a lot of animals that are in the west side of that unit that we're not seeing, and down in the lowlands in those Palo Verde thickets. And myself being the new guy, but the one that's put the boots in the ground out there, I would say we need to be cognizant of the animals that we did not see. The area is a huge, huge and vast unit. And the gentleman that went out and was guiding those particular hunters is a very capable man. But as anybody that spent time in the field will say, I've had good days and I've had bad days, and there are days where I just haven't seen animals. And that's one of those things, reflecting on it's called hunting instead of killing, brings to mind, because we are out there looking for one of the iconic animals in our state. There are a lot of rams that are great rams. They're not all going to be class four rams. And that's something we need to think about also in this vote. Thank you very much. And with all due respect to my commissioners, thank you for listening to a newbie.
Anyone else care to comment? So as I understand it, we have one negative vote from Commissioner Davis, and everyone else is in favor. Is that correct?
Incorrect. Guiler will be a nay vote.
Mr. Chairman, probably it would be best to do a roll call on these votes just because of the technology.
I think that's a good idea, Commissioner Davis. So why don't we start right down the row there. Mr. Brake, what's your vote on this proposal?
Well, am I voting on the proposal that Commissioner Gutenauer made?
I think you're voting on the proposal made by Amber in her presentation.
Mr. Chairman, now you have a motion on the floor by Commissioner Guggenhauer that agrees with the recommendations except for one change, which is to go back from two permits to one permit in Unit 44.
So correct. Let's vote on that first. Howard, how don't we do that? How do we vote on that proposal?
Well, that is, Chairman Sparks, that is the proposal that I seconded, and so I am in favor of Commissioner Gutenhauer's proposal. I would only add that it was very interesting to listen to the comments of the other commissioners, but I still think that what we need to do, it seems to me like we're surveying one of the wrong areas, and had we surveyed the other area, it would be a lot easier for me to make this decision. But based on that and 0.1%, I am in favor of the proposal Commissioner Gutenhauer made. But I thank Guiler for his explanation. That was great. Thank you.
The chairman's going to vote in favor of Amber also. So the vote is in favor. Is that correct?
I'm voting in favor of Commissioner Goodenhauer's amendment.
Mr. Chairman, if it helps, I could go through a roll call and ask how each member votes. Okay.
That's a good idea.
Okay, so there is a motion on the floor from Commissioner Guggenhauer to accept the department's recommendation with the one change. That's been seconded. So, Commissioner Brake, how do you vote?
Yes.
Okay, Commissioner Guggenhauer?
I vote yes.
Commissioner Davis?
I vote no.
Commissioner Giler?
I vote no.
Chairman Sparks?
I vote yes.
Mr. Chairman, the motion passes with a 3-2 vote.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Yes, I would also I thank the commissioners for their input and their conversation and guidance through here, and once again appreciate the department's efforts. I would also like to add one more thing. I would request that the department take an action item that during the next year we do a more intense survey and maybe a more timely survey of Hunt Unit 44A West, and we want that hopefully prior to the 2021 hunt.
That sounds like a reasonable comment.
Mr. Chairman, we will capture that action item.
Thank you, Ty.
So with that, Mr. Chairman, I think that concludes item number one.
No.
I'm sorry, Amber. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, I still have the amendment for Commission Order 2, which is deer. So the opportunity changes that we're looking for, or what we're looking for the amendment, is to decrease mule deer harvest in Unit 24B and to modify season dates to 4 of the Fort Huachuca deer hunts to align with their military leave schedules. The decrease in Unit 24B is from 400 permits to 200 permits for the season date of November 13th through 22. The change, we're also recommending changing the legal deer for the December over-the-counter archery deer season to antlered white-tailed deer only. The reason for this change is the landscape level changes that occurred during the Woodbury fire and the decreased number of mule deer observed during survey. We had low buck-to-doe ratios, and we have been seeing an overall decreasing trend in Unit 24B. And therefore, we're recommending this decrease in permits, overall decrease in harvest. For Fort Huachuca, the amendment is just to align season dates with the leave times that are scheduled for, or the military leave schedules. And the general season, the November 13 through 22, is recommended to go to November 20 through December 3rd. The two December seasons, the general and muzzleloader, are recommended to go from December 11 through 31 to December 18 through 31, and then the youth-only season would be November 13 through 29th rather than November 6 through 22. Overall, when you look at all permits that were already approved for the 2020 deer hunts, we're looking at a decrease of 170 permits statewide with this decrease from Unit 24B. The department has a recommendation when the commission is ready.
Mr. Chairman, the Hunt Recommendation Subcommittee of Commissioner Zeiler and Commissioner Davis support the department's recommendation.
I second it.
Any opposition?
No. We have to get the
recommendation. All in favor?
Hold on, Mr. Chairman.
I haven't read the recommendation yet. The department recommends the commission vote to amend Commission Order 2, Deer, for the 2020 seasons as presented.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to accept the department's recommendation on deer.
Second.
Chairman, I second that motion.
Anybody else? I also am going to approve that motion.
Mr. Chairman, I will go through a roll call again quickly, if you're okay with that.
That'd be great.
We have a motion and a second. Commissioner Brake?
In favor.
Commissioner Guggenhauer?
Yes.
Commissioner Geiler?
Yes.
Commissioner Davis?
Yes.
And Chairman Sparks?
Yes.
Okay, motion passes 5-0.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, thank you, Amber. Okay, Mr. Chairman, item number two is consideration of proposed amendments to Commission Orders 11, 12, 14, 15, and 16, small game, for the 2020-2021 hunting seasons, and proposed hunting season for Commission Orders 19 through 22 and 24, migratory game birds for 2020 to 2021. Presenter is John O'Dell, small game biologist. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to present to you today. This first segment, as the director mentioned, these are amendments to the small game segments, just a few of them between Commission Orders 11 and 18. I do have to admit, as surprised as you might be, that we all do make mistakes, and that's why I'm coming to you today with some of these amendments. There was a calendar shift that occurs due to the leap year that I don't think we anticipated when we set the regulations so far out. And so going backwards, we caught some of those errors this year before the seasons were set in stone. So just kind of cover through some of those right now. For Commission Order 11, tree squirrels, the correct date for our tree squirrel season on the Kaibab and Strip area actually is supposed to be September 10th versus September 13th, which is what the original had been set for. Commission Order 12, cottontail rabbit. These are season dates that affected the wildlife refuges across the state, actually closing on February 7th when the end of quail season closes as well. One clarification we wanted to provide in these amendments was to Commission Order 14, other birds and mammals, with regard to Gunnison's prairie dog. This clarification just gives a little more specific area to Gunnison's prairie dog, providing a little bit more protection and understanding that those prairie dogs that are south of the Gila River are the black-tailed, which are not open to hunting currently. For pheasant, because we made a change last season as well to do the experimental open two-week season, that really kind of added into the mix on the leap year calendar shift. And so for archery-only pheasant season, we were looking at October 16th through February 7th. This is for a statewide excluding the National Wildlife Refuges. The falconry-only season, again, the only adjustment we needed to make was to February 7th, which is also the end of quail season. The end of quail season on February 7th in 2021, statewide excluding the National Wildlife Refuges. For quail itself, the falconry-only season, this is an adjustment to the falconry-only season, which extends a little bit further. Instead of closing on what would have been a Saturday, it actually closes on a Thursday, March 4th, according to the guidelines. And I have a recommendation if the commission is prepared to hear it.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, the Department recommends to the Commission to vote to approve the amendments to Commission Orders 11, Tree Squirrel, 12, Cottontail, 14, Other Birds and Mammals, 15, Pheasant, and 16, Quail, as presented.
Mr. Chairman, the Hunt Commission Order Recommendation Subcommittee of Commissioner Geiler and Commissioner Davis supports the recommendation, and I'll make a motion to approve the changes as provided by Mr. O'Dell.
Second.
Anybody opposed?
Mr. Chairman, if there's no no discussion, I'll do the roll call again.
Thank you.
Commissioner Brake?
Yes.
Commissioner Guggenhauer?
Yes.
Commissioner Geiler?
Yes.
Commissioner Davis?
Yes.
Chairman Sparks? I think that was a yes?
Yes.
Okay, motion passes 5-0. I believe Jonathan has one more item.
Thank you, Mr. Director. Yes. Now moving on to the actual hunt recommendations for migratory birds for the 2020-2021 season. This includes Commission Orders 19 through 22 as well as 24. Beginning with Commission Order 19, Dove. This graphic here just shows our Arizona migratory bird stamp sales. Since going on, as you can see, 2019 was a particularly good year. We're actually very close to exceeding the 60,000 mark, which is something we haven't done in the past in terms of those registrations. Likely after all the stay-at-home quarantining we've been experiencing, I think we might be able to encourage hunters to get out on that first hunt for September 1st and maybe push that sales up over the top for the first time. Morning dove hunters here in Arizona still continue to experience some of the highest birds harvested per hunter, as well as enjoying about, on average, almost 3 days a field per hunter out there, which is really, really good considering what a lot of the rest of the country gets to experience compared to Arizona. Our white-winged dove call counts still remain very high. This spike that you see going in after 2015 is a direct result of the Desert Durum Wheat Council of Arizona and Southern California. Desert Durum wheat is a small grain crop now currently being grown in summer rotation in most areas like Yuma, Casa Grande, Marana, as well as in Southern California, and it's caused quite a spike in the white-winged dove colonies around these areas. So we can certainly thank farmers for this. Here in Arizona, this graphic is simply just to illustrate Arizona is the big heavy hitter when it comes to dove harvest within the Western Management Unit of all the Western states. Our percentage is very high, but we also house many of these birds, more so than California and a lot of the other states, even though white wings are expanding their range pretty dramatically at this point. We're not recommending any change to the early general dove season. This is September 1st through the 15th, both of which morning dove and white wings are a part of that 15 aggregate bag, with no more than 10 being white wings as part of that 15. And the possession limit is 3 times at 45, with no more than 30 being white wing doves. The late season, opening on November 20th, which is the Friday before Thanksgiving, and running out the remaining of our 45 days, goes to January 3rd, 2021. This is for morning doves only, which is a bag limit of 15, and then, of course, 45 in possession. We're recommending a juniors-only morning dove season, specifically on Robbins Butte Wildlife Area, of September 5th and 6th, with 15 morning and white-winged doves in the aggregate, with no more than 10. Being white wings, and the possession limit obviously being 3 times that, simply because there are days before and after this season. The falconry only dove hunt, which occurs in between our early season and before the start of our late season, September 16th through November 1st in 2020. Falconry bag limits for all migratory birds is 3, regardless of species, either singly or as part of the aggregate. And the falconry possession limit for all migratory birds is 9. As either singly or in the aggregate total. The collared dove hunt summary, this is again a year-long season of September 1st of 2020 through August 31st of 2021. It's the only one that's off cycle simply because it's easier to focus it around our normal dove hunting season cycles. The bag limit and possession limit is unlimited here as well as it is for falconry. I have a recommendation if the commission is ready to hear it.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, the Department recommends the Commission vote to approve Commission Order 19, Doves, in accordance with the final federal frameworks as presented.
Mr. Chairman, the Hunt Recommendation Subcommittee, Commissioner Geiler and Commissioner Davis, met and support the Department's recommendation, so I will make a motion to accept the department's recommendation on doves.
Second.
Commissioner Sparks votes yes also.
Mr. Chairman, if there's no discussion, I'll do the roll call.
Thank you.
Commissioner Brake?
Yes.
Commissioner Guggenhauer?
Yes.
Commissioner Geiler?
Yes.
Commissioner Davis?
Yes.
Chairman Sparks?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0. I think that was the end of item number two.
Negative, Director.
Oh, sorry.
I got a couple more.
Sorry.
Moving on to Bandtail Pigeon, Commissioner 20. Just as a refresher or a reminder for the Commission, the Bandtail Pigeon is the last surviving relative of the passenger pigeon. It is a woodland forest pigeon, not the ones that you typically see around in cities and parks and that kind of stuff. It's broken into two specific populations, the Pacific population as well as the inland or the interior population. Our interior population just resides within the four states, the four corner states, a little bit of Texas on occasion, but it winters mostly down in the Sierra Madre and down through Mexico. The Bandtail Pigeon hip harvest versus hunters, this is one thing that over time we've seen a decrease and decline within the hunting community as well as in the birds. And responsibly, we lowered the bag limit a number of years ago in response to this. But due to these low numbers, it's often hard for our Fish and Wildlife Service partners to accurately find and survey Bandtail Pigeon hunters who partake out in the field. We are currently working with Colorado, New Mexico, Utah, and in cooperation with the Fish and Wildlife Service to address the problems that we're seeing amongst all four of our states with getting more accurate estimates in terms of the harvest as well as hunters. We do recommend at this time continuation of our voluntary online registration here in Arizona to improve our harvest estimates, but we would like to make this mandatory within the future. Because we are allowed 14 days, we are recommending the full 14-day season for bandtail pigeon hunting in October 2nd through 15th of 2020. Bag limit of two birds as well as six in possession. Again, that reminder, the falconry bag limit for all migratory birds is three, either singly or in the aggregate, and nine in full possession for falconers. I have a recommendation when the commission's ready to hear it.
Proceed.
Mr. Chairman, the department recommends the commission vote to approve Commission Order 20, Bandtail Pigeon, in accordance with the final federal frameworks as presented.
Mr. Chairman, the Hunt Recommendation Subcommittee of Commissioner Geiler and Commissioner Davis met and support the department's recommendation. So I make a motion to accept the department's recommendation as presented.
Geiler seconds it.
All right, Mr. Chairman, I can do the roll.
Thank you.
Mr. Brake?
Yes.
Mr. Guggenhauer?
Yes.
Commissioner Geiler?
Yes.
Commissioner Davis?
Yes.
Chairman Sparks?
Yes.
The motion passes 5-0. Jonathan, you have one more, all right?
Believe three more, Mr. Director.
Okay.
Commission Order 21, waterfowl, coots, and moorhens. I just wanted to provide the commission an update on the splash limits. Last time I was in front of you, you had asked me to investigate the process of getting into the idea of a splash limit where it would simplify and reduce the complication within our waterfowl hunting regs. Well, what I can tell you is that anything that deviates from our federal frameworks tends to be a large process and has to go through a lot of different channels in order to do that. At first, you bring it up within your own flyway in those states seeking, you know, concurrence and moving forward to the Fish and Wildlife Service for the same. But then, of course, it's brought out to the other flyways for their concurrence as well. It would move from there to the Harvest Management Working Group simply because they need to investigate using what little data or data that is known, how what you're proposing would impact the overall harvest on the continental scale. That has representation from all the flyways as well as Fish and Wildlife Service. At that point, if everything is good, then it moves into the Service Regulations Committee for approval, which is when we're setting seasons. And then, of course, it has to get into the timeline rotation, such as recommendations we're making to the SRC this year will be for the following season. So it takes a little bit of time to move things through. As I approached our flyway, it appears that the central flyway already had something in the works. They seem to be a little ahead of us in terms of planning for something of a similar idea in terms of a splash limit, but this was specific to South Dakota and Nebraska. This became a very political hot-button issue at our meeting post the commission meeting last year when I went in, and what South Dakota and Nebraska actually were recommending was a two-tier licensing system beginning for this season. There was, as I had mentioned, this was a bit of a political issue, even involving governors and concerns over suing Fish and Wildlife Service and everything else with regard to this. So it got pushed through very quickly. It actually made it into the Harvest Management Working Group shortly thereafter for evaluation, and it actually pushed aside other priorities such as the Pacific Flyways pintail management model that we've been waiting on for several years. But as we discussed going through this, I was very involved in trying to understand this from the very beginning and contacting those folks to understand what they were doing. And what their system is, or what they're attempting to implement is a two-tier licensing scheme where tier one is a regular season, regular hunting license, regular limits, bag limits, restrictions, everything that we normally see out of our frameworks. But a second tier that hunters would opt into if they wanted to. Now, once you've chosen into one of these tiers, you're pretty much stuck with it the whole season and can't shift. But a tier two would be exactly the same season dates. However, you'd be limited to three ducks a day without any restrictions of the lower sublimits that we see on management plans with other ducks. And what they had looked for was about a 3 to 4 year experimentation evaluation before expanding this out to other states if necessary. Now, in conversations with my colleagues within the Pacific Flyway, we weren't super thrilled about the tiered license system, having two different licenses. I don't think a lot of other states share our commitment and enthusiasm for simplifying regulations, where adding another license system in there, as well as field checks, can complicate things a lot. And so upon further investigation in looking at this, simply going back on the commission's wishes in the past to reduce some of that issues and things, what it would require for Arizona to actually join into this two-tier system would require several rule changes for us, as well as an entirely new license class, as well as educating, you know, not only our folks and wildlife managers to understanding what this all means, but definitely would require a lot of background work. Additionally, it would require funding, some additional funding for the small game program, and some effort to provide additional survey and wing collection to those hunters, because we'd have to be able to identify them. It's something South Dakota and Nebraska have committed to, which is additional wing collection as well as additional survey of hunters, diary logging with their folks to better understand what this change does in terms of the overall with harvest and hunter behavior and a lot of things. What I would recommend coming out of this actually is one step that South Dakota and Nebraska were ahead of us in was recommending the performing of a human dimension survey for Arizona hunters that helps to identify our needs, desires, and direction. The other flyways tend to pay a lot of attention to human dimension surveys in ensuring that we're moving that the direction the hunters want to go in, or at least that the data is telling us to go. And so at this point, to continue on to move with splash limits, I would recommend us performing a similar human dimension survey with similar questions, and probably even providing some more questions just to learn a little bit more about our duck hunters and what it is that their particular needs are in identifying waterfowl.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir. Davis.
Jonathan, thank you for bringing this up. I do have a couple of questions to it, and then I have, I guess, a recommendation off of your recommendation. One is, when we talk about another license class, we're currently getting a stamp. Couldn't we have a Tier 2 stamp?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Davis, theoretically we could. I'm not sure I've investigated the laws fully enough to understand, simply because the license and our regular stamps provide full authority within those seasons, and so I'd have to converse a little bit with our law enforcement folks to understand that if a different stamp were created for that purpose, that it would give different privileges.
Because I think what I would recommend, and I understand the human dimension survey, I think it would be a good idea, and my recommendation would be that that survey and this process be put with the Hunt Recommendation Subcommittee so that we can look at this a little bit closer, examine and potentially assist with the survey instrument, because one of the things we need to do is survey specifically people that have chosen not to engage any longer in duck hunting because of its complications, which is a critical element in this. Those who are, let's just call it, more proficient in being able to identify and designate ducks may have a very different attitude than those who have walked away from that opportunity. I personally know a number of duck hunters who no longer engage in the activity because they can't identify or are fearful of misidentifying species. So I think the design of this is critical, and that should be done with the subcommittee. And we look at on the license piece, because in my mind, it's not as complicated. I know it's always more complicated than commissioners, we think, but it may not be as complicated as we think. And it may provide customers. I actually am not opposed to the idea of two tiers, because you'd have that opt-in decision maker as a customer. So I think, and I do want to really thank you for bringing this up. I know that that system that you operate within is highly bureaucratic and difficult. So thanks for pushing it. But I would recommend that we push this to the subcommittee, work with you, and come back to the commission with potential opportunities to see if the barriers aren't too great.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Davis, that's I think you're absolutely spot on. The original human dimension survey that was performed included those who hunt ducks and those who don't, identifying a lot of those same issues that you had brought up. So I can certainly share that survey with you that they had conducted to move forward ahead of time. So
that'd be great. And I think what one of the things, though, that I'd be looking at is that we actually identify people who self-identify. We ask the question, we find people that no longer duck hunt, and then we have a conversation with those who no longer duck hunt about the reasons for that. And I know there's other reasons, but we examine that population in particular, because I think it may be larger than we think. The more complicated you make something, you lose people from doing it. And duck hunting has become extraordinarily complicated. We understand it from a management perspective, but I don't think anybody with a straight face would say that duck hunting is simple. And quite frankly, I even worry a little bit about if we keep going the direction we're going, the number of people who will still duck hunt but may not pay attention to the limits per species, that population may grow, and we may have even larger problems from a biological standpoint because the complication, people get frustrated with complication, they just do what they do. So I think there's a biological reason to be having this conversation as well. So I would look forward to sitting down with somebody as experienced and bright and good looking as you are to push forward to see if there is a way to make this a little bit more customer friendly.
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman.
And I know that may be an impossible feat, but sometimes the art of the impossible is the more.
Anyone else have any comments?
Chairman Sparks.
Yes, sir.
I would echo Commissioner Davis's insight that he just brought up with the two-tier system. We've had a whole lot of folks that have walked away from this opportunity that the department provides. And if we could identify a way to reinvigorate some of the folks that have just kind of, because of the complications with species identification and they're worried about bag limit checks, if this were a way to go on ahead and bring them back into the fold, so to speak, I think that would be a very, very wise thing to do. And I echo Kurt's sentiments about how good-looking Jonathan is. But more importantly, I would say that if there was a way to generate some additional revenues in it above and beyond what we're already doing with our migratory bird stamps, this is a avenue that we definitely need to look at. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman? My comment on this is that having participated in this with a grandson, I think this might open up more youth getting involved into duck hunting, because quite frankly it's very difficult for young people who are just starting to duck hunt to identify those, and it just becomes very frustrating for them and becomes frustrating for the people that take them, and this could solve a problem and also open up an avenue to get more people involved in the duck hunting and goose hunting. So I think it's a great idea.
Anyone else have any comments? As chairman, I certainly agree. I gave up duck hunting years ago because, one, the duck hunting had become a big fiasco. Identification is certainly a fiasco wherever you hunt, so I think this is a good idea, and I think we should, Commissioner Davis had a good idea, and I think we need to move forward on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, member of the commission. I'll definitely be back in touch with you regarding splash limits and the ability for a survey and direction we can take.
Thank you.
As far as the North American waterfowl breeding population, we've taken a slight dip in the past couple years, coming down a little bit from our all-time high in the recorded record. Still in really good shape. We're well above the long-term average, and things are still looking very good out there. Some ducks better than others. Other ones have declined a little bit. Others have increased. But some of this is due to the drying out that we've been seeing up in the Canadian provinces in a few areas. This slide here illustrates that Arizona most definitely is more of a duck than a goose state, just in terms of the actual harvest and the number of days that our folks spend out in the field participating in each. Don't be afraid of the psychedelic beach balls. This is an annual perspective that I get every year when I get a chance to look at those wing collection surveys that are performed in each one of the flyways. This gives me a chance to actually look at what the makeup of the harvest was in this year, and also it's kind of a reflection of what migrated into our state for various reasons. What's very interesting is that three of the four flyways are governed by what is known as the mallard models. Mallards tend to be the most abundant as well as the most generalist in terms of species, and that drives usually what our regulations are. So in most states, mallard tends to be number one, followed by greenwing as number two. In recent years, a strange occurrence has happened here in Arizona because we're one of the few states that's really not following the norm across the country. One of those things is our widgeon population. Our widgeon population is migrating into Arizona at greater rates and higher densities than they're actually growing in the potholes. For some reason, that medium-sized duck is definitely coming in here. You can see back in the 17-18 season, it actually took over as the number one duck harvested in Arizona, higher than mallards, which is very unusual. The 2018-19 season, mallards took their number one spot, but widgeon, that piece that's white, has grown tremendously. And of course, as well, usually about 80% or higher of our harvest are what are known as puddle ducks. Those are a lot of the ducks that most of our hunters are concerned about. They're also very good at decoying. They tend to work really well, and they taste very good too. Divers represent a much smaller amount, and if you're a diver fan like myself, even those birds are certainly enjoyable as well. So, as such, the Pacific Flyway Western Mallard model for 2020 is divided into four possible packages based on how the populations are doing: a liberal, a moderate, restrictive, and closed. Under this package this year, we are set at a liberal season of 107 days and seven birds is the maximum we could possibly take. Ducks with specific management plans, such as mallards with the current season of 107-day season with seven ducks per day, no more than two hens or Mexican-like ducks. That's a specific caveat because of Arizona, because we do have a bird here that is very unusual and only really here in the southern tier states. That looks very similar to a hen mallard. Unless you had them both in hand, it's almost hard to identify them on and of themselves. Pintail under the current model still is in a moderate season of 107 days with only one per day. Scop has dipped just slightly below the guidelines where we'd like it at for our current model, and so it specifies a moderate season of 86 days with only two per day. Canvasbacks, the current model, maintains liberal 107 days with a two per day, and redheads as well at the liberal season of 107 days with only two per day. Arizona is divided into two separate zones, the mountain zone and desert zone. The mountain zone obviously being higher elevation where we do have a lot of breeding ducks and it actually freezes up in the wintertime where the ducks move off in certain years. And so that's the seasons in the mountain zone tend to be earlier, start earlier and end earlier versus the desert zone, which the ducks move into later. So we maintain it out a much later time frame. For the 2020-2021 waterfowl season, as part of that liberal package, what we're recommending is 2 days for youth. In the mountain zone, it starts the first, it's September 26th or 27th. That's what starts us off. In the desert zone, it ends up being the last possible days we can for February 6th and 7th. For falconry, the falconry occurs usually between our general season and youth season, giving them 4 days, September 4th, 28th through October 1st in 2020, and then February 1st through February 4th in 2021. Our general waterfowl season for the mountain zone is October 2nd, 2020, and through January 10th, 2021. The desert zone doesn't begin until October 23rd, about 3 weeks later, and runs through January 31st. I would like to mention that this is the first season that we've actually pushed our date to January 31st instead of ending on a Sunday. It was an option that was given to us last year, kind of at an auspicious time where we weren't able to make the moves because of our connection with California and the Colorado River. But this year we now are going all the way out, extending as far as we can to the very end of the season. Scop again will begin 15 days later in both the mountain and desert zones, running to their concurrent end, mostly because the lesser scop generally don't tend to arrive in Arizona until a little bit later anyway. There's very few scop at the very beginning and openings of most of those seasons. So again, the summary of ducks as far as bag limits goes, the overall daily duck bag limit is seven. With mallards, that's seven mallards with no more than two female or Mexican-like ducks, one pintail, two redhead, two scop with the 86-day season, canvasback with two, black-bellied whistling duck with one, and all other ducks being seven. The possession, three times the daily bag with a total of 21 ducks. And, of course, adding in the summary of recommendations for geese with bag limits. White geese include all of Ross, Snow, and Blue geese with a 20 bird daily bag limit. Dark geese now include Canada, Cackling, Brant, and White-fronted. As we work with the American Ornithologist Society to separate out recognized species, more recently, Cackling was separated from Canada, and that's particularly important for the Pacific flyway since we have up to 7 different subspecies that may need to require their own recognized subspecies in the future. The dark geese are at 4 daily bag, and of course the possession in line with the other ducks is a 3-time daily bag with either 60 white geese and 12 dark geese in terms of total possession. For coots and moorhens or any of the gallinules, the bag limit is 25 singly or in the aggregate, same dates as the rest of waterfowl season. Possession is 3 times for a total of 75 singly or in the aggregate. And I have a recommendation when the commission's ready to hear it.
Proceed.
The department recommends that the commission vote to approve Commission Order 21, Waterfowl, in accordance with the final federal frameworks as presented.
Mr. Chairman, the Hunt Recommendation Subcommittee of Commissioner Geiler and Commissioner Davis met and support the department's recommendation on waterfowl.
Commissioner Geiler seconds it.
Ty, you want to do the roll call?
We'll do it for Commissioner Brick.
Yes.
Commissioner Guggenhauer?
Yes.
Commissioner Geiler?
Yes.
Commissioner Davis?
Yes.
Chairman Sparks?
Yes.
All right. Motion passes 5-0. Jonathan?
Moving on to Commission Order 22, Snipe. Snipe suffers the same fate of some of the other lesser used species like bandtail pigeon, where it is hard to estimate harvest as well as hunter participation in this area. The reason why snipe hunting became a joke throughout most of North America is it's one of the few species that actually closed its season for a number of decades, for more than a generation. After that occurred, so that's during that closure, that's when you hear the term going on a snipe hunt or any of that stuff, because it was nearly non-existent at the time and became a woodland faux pas where you run out into the woods with a flashlight and a gunny sack to try and catch them. But they are an actual bird, and you do hunt them with shotguns. They actually do hold for pointing dogs as well. But out in the marshlands. So after we lost that generation of hunting, to bring it back and revive it was one of the hardest things that we've seen, and we've seen an overall decline over the years in that tradition of snipe hunting being passed along. And so that is kind of what is represented here with this. Is you can see it's very hard to find snipe hunters or those who are dedicated to that sport. It's why it makes any of us nervous to have a closed season for very long on any of the game species, simply because it could fade away. The 2020-2021 snipe season recommendation, it follows along the general waterfowl seasons, same dates for the general snipe season of October 2nd through 2020, of 2020 through January 10th of 2021, and then in the desert zone, October 23rd of 2020 through January 31 of 2021. This has a bag limit of 8 per day as well as a possession limit of 24. I have a recommendation if the commission's ready to hear it. Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, the department recommends the commission vote to approve Commission Order 22, Snipe, in accordance with the final federal frameworks as presented.
Mr. Chairman, the Hunt Recommendation Subcommittee of Commissioner Geiler and Commissioner Davis met and support the department's recommendation, but I did want to say I was shocked to find out that you don't use a bag, a flashlight, and a stick to beat on the ground to find a snipe, because I've just been operating under that for a lot of years.
Not a legal method of take, Commissioner Davis.
That's why their numbers are in.
I second the motion. It's Commissioner Geiler.
Mr. Chair, I'll do the roll call. Commissioner Brake?
I'm not sure what I'm voting for, but I think yes.
Commissioner Gaidenauer?
Yes.
Mr. Guiler?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes, and Commissioner Brigg, we have up. You have upheld the no burlap sack hunting method.
Commissioner Davis, I do have snipe on the ranch, and I want to extend my invitation to you to bring your bag and flashlight down to come down and join us.
Sherman Sparks.
I'm afraid to vote. The answer is yes.
Okay. 5-0. Jonathan?
Thank you. And lastly, Commission, we have Commission Order 24, Sandhill Crane. Real briefly, I wanted to provide you an update on the Sandhill Crane draw. Of course, last year I asked, recommended to you that we move Sandhill Crane into the fall booklet and out of its own separate hand draw. It was one of the last few hand draws that the department still had. And so I just wanted to provide you a little update on how that went. We did successfully make that transition. Historically, under the old system of the hand draw, we were just about pretty much meeting demand for these hunts with roughly the same number of applicants as we would have permits. It happened at an off-the-wall time where it wasn't an association with other draws, and so I think a lot of people tended to either forget about it or it wasn't something, you know, high on their priority list because draw results had already been out usually by that time for deer and other fall hunts. So, moving into that, we actually jumped to about a little over three to one demand ratio by moving it into the draw. So we had about 1,829 applicants for our 555 permits last year. What this did is it increased department revenue just strictly from application fees, a little over $13,000 of what we would normally do. Under the old hand draw system, we actually couldn't, if someone wasn't drawn, we weren't actually able to keep that application fee and would have to send back the entire check or money order back to them. And so it was one of those things where this was the right move for the agency in the long haul. We do expect that that'll continue. Several of the hunters, actually, after this year's drawing, simply because guys who were used to kind of getting drawn every year because they'd put in every year, who didn't this year, had a lot of questions and inquiries about bonus points and point guard moving forward. One of the things that is going on currently, Article 1 is under review and rulemaking, as I'm sure you've seen. I have asked the team to consider adding Sandhill Crane to the list of bonus point species. We don't have anything other than big game on that list, so this would be the first small game species and even a migratory bird to put on there. This precedent isn't unusual. Actually, Utah set the first precedent of putting bonus points on swans for their hunt a number of years ago and has worked out very well for them. And their swan hunting has about a 2-to-1 demand ratio. So having us up at over 3 currently is a very good thing. So our Sandhill Cranes, our entire hunt is based off the Rocky Mountain population, which is one of the smallest of all the Rocky Mountain or of all the Sandhill Crane populations globally. We try to maintain that population between 17 and 21,000 throughout the Rocky Mountains. It's one of those species that's kind of misunderstood where you couldn't, as most people tend to think that, oh, we can have unlimited wildlife. Well, Sandhill Cranes actually cause problems once they kind of cross over that 21,000 mark threshold, particularly with farmers in the North Country. And Sandhill Cranes can be very devastating on crops, which is a lot of the reasons why much of Sandhill Cranes, starting with the exception of Arizona, But Arizona is unique in the fact that not only do we get Rocky Mountain Sandhill Cranes, but we also get Mid-Continent. And the Mid-Continent population numbers at near over 500,000 at this point. The Rocky Mountain population only makes up a small fraction of what we actually harvest here in the state and allows us to put out more hunters than any other western state who simply only have the Rocky Mountains. Again, we use a three-year average, and currently that three-year average is almost at the 21,000 mark. Once we cross a 21,000 threshold mark, that actually increases permit allocations to each and every state, depending on past performance and on how well they're good at filling those tags. Arizona's allocation this year is 112 cranes, which is slightly down from the 118 we had last year, but this is just based on survey methodology and where the birds tend to end up year over year. again, this is a look at our Rocky Mountain population over time, as well as our harvest allocation versus our harvest. As you can see, I mean, there's only been pretty much 2 years where we've come close to actually meeting that allocation or exceeding that. What we don't want to do is exceed that population or what our allocation is, because that takes away from the allocations to other states. So we've usually run pretty low, but one of the things to keep in mind is that we actually do end up taking more cranes than any other state, simply because of that unique mix that Arizona and New Mexico share. The total wintering population, this is a graphic set on two different axes. The wintering population in Arizona tends to remain very high. We've seen it grow over time, and now we're hovering a lot into the 30 to 40,000 most years. But our entire harvest generally is only about 500. But as you can see, as we've kind of worked along, we've kind of dialed it in and figured out how to be able to harvest more birds and maximize that. And so we've peaked that harvest up to a maximum that we can right now. And so I think we've got it pretty well dialed in. Every third year, Arizona Game and Fish Department has agreed as part of the Rocky Mountain Sandhill Crane Management Plan to conduct a mandatory check of all harvested birds, requiring all hunters to actually present for physical inspection every harvested bird. This allows us to do that compositional breakup between the Rocky Mountain birds as well as the mid-continent birds. As well as we run two check stations, one in the Crane Lake Wildlife Area down outside Kansas Settlement in Wilcox, and the other in Unit 28 in downtown Duncan. So we are making that recommendation again. The last one was conducted in 2017. Our general sandhill crane hunt summary, the way our season's structured at present is we usually do three-day hunts with 1 day off in between. Stacked up in stratified for five hunts, particularly in the multi-unit of 30A, 30B, 31, and 32 combined, followed up by five hunts within Unit 28. They're allowed to hunt anywhere in the unit. And this is, again, 3 days with 1 day off in between, starting the Friday or the Saturday after Thanksgiving. And then, of course, our two new hunts that we initiated last year in Unit 29, which fall on the weekends, corresponding to the same timelines that are in the multi-unit area. Each hunter, of course, obviously would be given three tags for allowed a total maximum of three sandhill cranes each, as a bag limit and possession. The archery-only season starts a little bit earlier. It's a three-day season as well, and we provide that opportunity to 10 hunters. And then our youth-only sandhill crane season follows all of the other hunts, particularly down in the multi-unit area, where the maximum number of birds have migrated in at that point, so the kids can take advantage of that. A lot of them last year, I know, were very successful at this. Again, same bag and possession limit of three sandhill cranes. And I have a recommendation if the commission is ready to hear it.
Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman and members of the commission, the department recommends the commission vote to approve Commission Order 24, Sandhill Crane, in accordance with the final federal frameworks as presented.
Mr. Chairman, the Hunt Recommendation Subcommittee met and supports the recommendation of the department on Commission Order 24, and I do want to add a big thanks to Jonathan and the entire department. The publicity and the attention paid to sandhill cranes, I think, is directly impacting the number of people who want to participate in this great opportunity. And I hope you do move forward strongly on the bonus point and point guard opportunity for this species.
Commissioner Guiler seconds it. And I echo Commissioner Davis's thoughts on moving forward with the bonus point system. Thank you.
Director Gray, you want to take a vote?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a quick comment. As a Southeast Arizona resident, the sandhill crane hunting was the best kept secret we had in this state for years and years. And I was always drawn every year. I have not got drawn for the last 3 years. And so I, too, would recommend we do a bonus point now that the secret is out.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Guggenheimer. Jonathan, I'd like to say thanks. I appreciate the phone call and walking through here. I had no idea how much area you cover and how much how complex all these different hunts are. So I appreciate the conversation and the help you've done. You're doing a great job.
Mr. Chairman, I'll do the roll call.
Thank you.
Commissioner Brake?
Yes.
Mr. Guggenhauer?
Yes.
Mr. Geiler?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
And Chairman Sparks?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0. Jonathan, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Director. One last thing I would like to pass along to the Commission. Pretty much weekly now, I'm receiving reports from colleagues and partners that we work with, Canadian Wildlife Service, Alaska, Northern Tier States, even some of our Arctic Circle folks and all that. Because of the COVID-19 and what's going on in terms of quarantine and everything else, it seems like a lot of things are falling like dominoes in terms of our surveys and banding efforts and that for waterfowl. So we're kind of on a shifting sands right now, as it were, figuring out whether or not we're walking in blind to the next recommendations I'll make to you for the following season, simply because we may not have a complete set of data to be looking at going forward. But I am happy to say that Arizona is at least at this point still moving forward with our dove banding. We're holding down the dove arm of the Pacific Flyway and the Western Management Unit at this time, and so we're at least happy to report that. But a lot of the other partners that we have won't be able to conduct many of the data points that we usually rely on. So next year could be very interesting in terms of what the recommendations look like and frameworks going forward. But
thank you, Jonathan. Mr. Chairman, that takes us to item number 3, which is approval of law enforcement boating safety funds, LEBSEF, grant allocation formula for FY 2021. Presenter is Gene Elms, law enforcement branch chief.
Thank you. Gene, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, it's very good to see you guys in your native habitat this morning. excuse me. During the 2011 legislative session, Arizona Revised Statute 5383 was modified to require the Arizona Game and Fish Commission to annually approve the funding allocation formula for the Law Enforcement Boating Safety Fund, or LEBSEF. For those of you that don't know, LEBSEF is a portion of the watercraft licensing fund. So 60% of that fund remains with the department. 5% is allocated to the State Lake Improvement Fund, which goes to state parks. And 35% of that fund goes to the Law Enforcement Boating Safety Fund that's administered to the 8 counties identified in this recommendation. The department, the commission, was given responsibilities for administrating the fund and allocating the formula annually, and we share that with the state treasurer who administers those funds on our behalf. The LEBSEF apportionment is divided, derived from the watercraft licensing revenue and distributed pursuant to ARS 5323. The basis for the proposed formula is derived from historical formula developed by state parks prior to 2009. This formula is traditionally updated every 3 years to reflect current watercraft survey voter use survey and revised annually to include the most recent salary data obtained from the counties. In 2016, the commission directed the department to review the allocation formula and determine if there was more equitable distribution with regard to border use and impact to the counties while considering tax base in rural counties and ensuring each boating safety program remained viable. In 2017, the staff met with the LEBSEF partners, and the consensus was reached to regarding the formula that would be presented to the commission in 2017. The department has annually presented this formula to the commission for approval. We are not recommending any changes for the formula moving forward into next fiscal year. We are working with state parks to update the boater use survey, and hopefully we'll have new numbers for this formula going into next year. But for now, we're not recommending any changes. So if there's no discussion, I do have a recommendation.
Anybody have any questions of Gene? Gene, give us your recommendation.
Yes, sir. The department recommends the commission vote to approve the Law Enforcement Boating Safety Fund allocation formula for fiscal year 2021 as presented.
Okay. Director?
Mr. Chairman, roll call. Commissioner Brake?
Yes.
Commissioner Guggenhauer?
Yes.
Commissioner Geiler?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Chairman Sport?
Yes.
Motion passes. Thank you, Gene.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, item four is an informational item. It's information item announcing the 2020 Heritage Grant Awards. Our presenter is Luann Dehart, Heritage Fund and Grants Coordinator.
Mr. Chairman, is it possible to have about a 10-minute break?
Of course it is. Director, is that okay with your group?
Yep, we will take a 10-minute break. Start back up. It will be 9:35.
More or less, I could just leave my computer as it is and be back at 10 minutes is what I was planning on doing. Is that correct?
That's fine.
Thank you. I have to let the cat out.
We're live.
Mr. Chairman, we are back live. That will take us back to item four, which is information item announcing 2020 Heritage Grant Award. Presenters, Luann Dehart, Heritage Fund and Grants Coordinator.
Good. Proceed, please. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairman Sparks, members of the Commission, Director Gray, and Deputy Director Finley. I am here to announce the awardees for the 2020 Heritage Grants pursuant to Arizona Game and Fish Department Rule 12-4702I, which reads, the department shall notify an applicant in writing of the results of the applicant's submission and announce Heritage Grant awards at a regularly scheduled open meeting of the commission. This is an information item and a public read only. For 2020, the department received 46 Heritage Grant applications. The total funding request for all applications was $1,011,600, with match totaling $1,044,727. The total amount being awarded is $312,837, with match totaling $461,983. The funding window and amounts available were for schoolyard habitat, available amount was $30,000. Six proposals were scored. Four were awarded grants totaling $11,769. Public access, the available amount was $50,000. Nine proposals were scored. Two were awarded grants totaling $41,300. Urban wildlife, available amount was $100,000. 27 proposals were scored. One proposal was rejected. Five were awarded grants totaling $100,000. Identification, inventory, acquisition, protection, and management, IOPM, available amount was $200,000. Three proposals were scored. Two were awarded grants totaling $159,768. For schoolyard habitat, the awardees, our Continental Elementary School District, requested and will receive $2,800 for the project titled Bottom-Up Approach to Improving Habitat for Wildlife and Student Learning with Rainwater Basins, Gabions, and Gardens. Continental Elementary School District is providing match in the amount of $2,610. Valley of the Sun Early Childhood Association and Sunrise Elementary from the Deer Valley School District requested and will receive $1,000 for the project titled Flip This Playground, Mariposa Garden. They will be providing match in the amount of $3,000. Cimarron Springs Elementary School requested and will receive $1,719 for the project titled Sonoran Habitat and Outdoor Classroom. They will be providing match in the amount of $170. Trees Matter Creighton Community Foundation and Creighton School District requested and will receive $6,250 for the project titled Local Pollinator Habitat at Creighton Community Garden. Trees Matter will be providing match in the amount of $12,190. For public access, Friends of Northern Arizona Forests requested and will receive $14,851 for the project titled Flagstaff OHV Impact Mitigations. Match is being provided in the amount of $14,851. Town of Pinetop Lakeside requested and will receive $25,000 for the project titled Mountain Meadow Parking Area Project Phase 1. Match is being provided in the amount of $38,863. For Urban Wildlife, Urban Habitat, Southwest Wildlife Conservation Center requested $34,700 and will receive $33,067 for the project titled Bobcats Living on the Urban Wildlands Interface with Tucson Mountain Park and Saguaro National Park. Match is being provided in the amount of $69,540. Coconino County Parks and Recreation requested and will receive $7,337 for the project titled Sawmill County Park Road Pond Improvements. Match is being provided in the amount of $10,112. McDowell Sonoran Conservancy requested $39,401 and will receive $32,996 for the project titled Wildlife Connectivity in Scottsdale's McDowell Sonoran Preserve. Match is being provided in the amount of $177,569. Audubon, Arizona requested and will receive $6,100 for the project titled Rio Salado Audubon Center Safe Harbor Site Enhancements. Match is being provided in the amount of $6,100. Town of Prescott Valley requested and will receive $20,500 for the project titled Community Fishing Sites Lake Aeration Systems. Match is being provided in the amount of $15,000. For identification, inventory, acquisition, protection, and management, IOPM, University of Louisiana at Lafayette requested and will receive $925 for the project titled Uncovering the Genetic Basis of Survival from Plague in Gunnison's Prairie Dog. Match is being provided in the amount of $60,768. Arizona State University, Arizona Board of Regents requested and will receive $89,843 for the project titled Surveys to Assess Current Status and Distribution of Arizona Toad. Match is in the amount of $51,121. And those are all the awards. Thank you for listening. Does anyone have any questions?
Commissioner Chairman Sparks?
Yes, I have no questions. Thank you.
No. Chairman, this is Commissioner Davis. Can I ask a question?
Please proceed.
Good morning. Thanks for the presentation. The University of Louisiana at Lafayette, did we previously provide them a grant?
From what I've seen in the past, we have not. I can check into it more and let you know. But for the past 3 years, I haven't seen anything from them.
Okay. For some reason, it rung a bell with me, and I wanted to know what happened to the first proposal. But maybe I'm wrong.
Or maybe they put in and weren't awarded. But I will check that out for you.
Mr. Chairman?
Thank you.
Yes, go ahead.
I wonder if before we awarded that amount of money to another university out of state, if the department went through the three universities that are here that have wildlife facilities in them, if we had checked with them to see if there was something they might be interested in doing or could have participated in that before we awarded that.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, we release the proposals or the time that people can start putting in. It was released around the middle of September, the beginning of September. They have until October 31st to put in their applications. And I believe we had some like from UA, and there may have been another one like with ASU. But once they put in the application, it goes through technical review, and then it goes through a scoring committee. And once a scoring committee, it's whoever has scored high enough is the ones that are awarded.
So to answer my question, all three of those universities did apply for this grant on this particular subject?
For the IAPAM? Let me check. I got it right here.
Mr. Chairman, I think you're asking if they applied for a grant for the specific thing on what is being awarded for I believe, is Gunnison Prairie Dogs. This is a competitive grant program, so it's up to the applicant to apply, put the proposal forward, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I brought this up before, yeah. And my concern is that we as taxpayers try to support the wildlife facilities at these universities. And even though I think Louisiana and Lafayette is a great university and probably has some wonderful information, and we need that information, it always bothers me a little bit to see that amount of money going out of state in universities as opposed to universities here that are already suffering for lack of funds. So that's just my little thank you for allowing me to say that, and I will remain quiet now.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, for the three that were scored for Heritage, for IAPAM, Louisiana scored, the score total was 97.3, ASU was 73.3, and University of Arizona did put in a application for the Gunnison's Prairie Dog, but their score was 34. So due to the subject matter expert and the scoring team, it was not as good of a proposal and would not have given the department as much information as they would need. University would provide, of Louisiana would provide a lot more.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, that is a follow-up question.
Yes, sir.
I think this question may be more directed at Ty, and I am also sensitive to Commissioner Brake's points on this. One of the things I was wondering about this entire program is, does it, before we release the request for proposals, does the committee align or provide advice to potential applicants about how these proposals may line up with the commission's priorities and the department's priorities, meaning there's a direct connection between what we're trying to achieve through our strategic objectives?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner David, Lou Anne can certainly chime in here too, but yes, the department puts together funding windows, which outline the specific areas where we're looking or needing information from, and then we request proposals that align to those. Those, are again, are based on department needs or commission priorities when they apply.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, if you would like in the future, I could send you these funding proposals that we have before it opens up time to, put in for the applications before the grant period starts, so that you could have a look at them if you wanted.
I think it may be interesting. Oh, sorry about that, Commissioner Brake.
No, I'm sorry. The answer to your question is yes, I would appreciate that if you don't mind.
Okay.
Commissioner Davis here. From my perspective, that'd be very interesting to see what as Ty mentioned, if these are aligning with department needs, it'd be interesting for the commission to see how that fits. In a lot of ways, that may be more informative, quite frankly, than ultimately and I know you have to provide the recipients as part of the program requirements, but that may be a very interesting perspective to see how that lines up. And don't ever let Commissioner Brake score any U of A proposal, because he's a total homer.
That's what I've heard.
I got a better education than some of you.
I'd like to get a copy of it also.
Mr. Chairman, we will take that as an action item and absolutely do that in the future.
Thank you.
Chairman Sparks, if I might, Commissioner Guiler.
Yes, sir, please.
Ms. Lou Anne, thank you for taking the time on the phone to walk me through this entire process. I was absolutely floored when you started explaining all of the grant proposals that you receive and have to go through and score. And having done some of that for scholarships in our local Tri-City area here in Yavapai County, my hat's off to you, because that's not an easy job. And I would commend you and the department for one of the urban grants that you're doing here with the town of Prescott Valley, because the department doesn't have a better friend than we do with the Parks and Rec director there in Prescott Valley with Brian Whitty. And part of what these aeration systems for the local lakes are doing is to help promote a healthier aquatic environment for some of the stockings that the department is doing. And I was unaware of it, and I think the department was unaware of some of the needs we had. So you guys, in an indirect way, are going to help get a lot of young people introduced to the world of fishing. And I think the department is probably going to see you in particular, some new stuff coming in the future for other avenues to help bring people into the fold of hunting and fishing. So thank you for what you're doing. I sure appreciate the time you spent with me. And just wanted to make a comment in front of all the staff. I appreciate the hand-holding. It was needed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, Commissioner Guiler, that's fine. I could probably go a lot more into it than we did, but it was my pleasure.
Mr. Chairman, before we move on, I'd like to ask Jim DeVos to provide a little bit here, because his team certainly helps develop those windows that were brought up earlier. So, Jim, you on? Apparently, he's not able to talk.
He's let the cat out, I think. So.
Okay.
One little slip.
Okay. All right, Mr. Chairman, sorry about that.
No, I'm sorry about my comment. Thank you.
No, that's right. Okay, so if Jim can't join in, we will. I think we can move on to the next item, sir.
Okay, thank Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. Thank you very much.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, that moves us to item 4A, which is an update on memorandum of understanding with the U.S. Forest Service Southwest Region. Presenter is Clay Crowder, Habitat Chief.
Thank you, Director. Good morning, Mr. Chair, Commissioners. I will say it was, I think this morning was the final meeting that I heard a dog bark in the background, so it's been a good week. So I'm going to just jump into this, provide a background and then an update for the commission, particularly Commissioner Guiler. I think we're able to talk through some of the work the department's been doing. So the department has had an MOU in place with the Southwest Forest Service Region since 2010. In September of this last year, I presented to the commission and to allow the department to move forward in working with the AG's office and also the Forest Service to update the 2010 MOU for the following reasons. And this is related to organizational changes both within the department and the Forest Service. I think a couple of these other ones are particularly important and ones that we've noted. A commitment to providing cooperating agency status on all federal land planning projects. That's been an item the commission's been attentive to, as well as the department. New things like research and data sharing and finding effective ways to include those. Issue and conflict resolution pathways. And then one that's really important, I'll give a little bit of background here, was the principal language for commission and department authorities. And this is something that stems from, I think, approximately 2012, where the commission directed the department that any time we enter into an agreement with a federal agency, whether it's sub-agreements or even overarching master MOUs such as this one, that we cover these four principal terms. And this is, I'll read through these for the benefit of the commission. Whereas the commission has a primary statewide responsibility for management actions related to fish and wildlife populations within the state of Arizona. Whereas the Arizona Game and Fish Department, hereafter AGFD, acts under the authority of the commission. Whereas the, insert federal agency here, is responsible for managing fish and wildlife habitat on, in this case, Forest Service public lands within the state of Arizona. And whereas accordingly, in this case, Forest Service has primary responsibility for management actions relating to fish and wildlife habitats within the state of Arizona, consistent with their purposes. And in my review of the MOU, as I was coming into this position, noted that that was not there, and this has been an opportunity for us to remind our federal partners of the what the commission seeks to have within our agreements, and that is why presented that to the commission to include this in an update. So kind of give you a status on actions to date. October 2019, so again, keep in mind September is when the commission gave the nod to the department to work to move forward. Discussed this with the regional forester. This is a conversation that Ty led during our October 2019 coordination meeting. Part of it was really at the time seeking to get some a little bit more specific language with respect to the cooperating agency stuff, and the regional forester committed to embarking on this effort together. Then January 2020, waiting for Forest Service personnel to be assigned to the project. They had some vacancies at the regional office due to retirement. And then March, we had a conference call discussing what the steps are and what we'd be needing to do for not only the MOU, but also several sub-agreements that not only the department was looking at, but also the Forest Service. And then as of this month, beginning to review the MOU from at least the department's perspective, and this is my term only, but just redlining things that were not consistent with commission guidance recently, or also where there were deficiencies in addition to not only what we identified in slide two, but also the principal language. And then trying to define timelines and deliverables. And I think this is important just as an example and unrelated to this MOU. The department's also working through renewing an MOU with BLM, and it's taken us about probably a little over a year in discussions. We think we're at a place where shortly we'll be able to provide that to the state director and Director Gray for execution. And so having deliverables and timelines gives both of our respective agencies something to work through. So that's a summary up to date of what the work that I've either been a part of or coordinated on. And at this time, I'm happy to take any questions from the commission.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, proceed.
Yes, Jim Guggenhauer here. Thank you, Clay, for the update. And I know I speak for the entire commission when I say that we appreciate the recent direction by Secretary Perdue and the Department of Agriculture and Washington, D.C. staff. But at the same time, we recognize that over the last years, the current MOU with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, or the U.S. Forest Service, has not been followed at certain times. In the past 5 years, there's been dozens of letters that have been written by the department and the commission to the Forest Service urging adherence to the MOU. And I can only find two where those letters were even acknowledged by the Forest Service. Each month, Clay, you go through 20 active travel management plans or LRMPs, and some of those go back 14 years. So these are complex topics, and the commission has acknowledged in recent months that there has been better cooperation in some areas of that area. So while I'm encouraged by the recent steps taken, I and other commissioners will be following this progress closely, and we look forward to the update of this MOU. Lastly, I'd like to say that or request that the department take a look at this MOU, and as the language is developed, we'd like it to be consistent, explicit, and define areas of responsibility. We want to make sure that they're well-defined in the MOU. There's a stark difference in the wording between the different MOUs that are currently in place, and we want to make sure that we get some consistency in those. Thank you.
Commissioner Chairman Sparks?
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Mr. Commissioner Davis.
Thanks a lot, Clay. You are on the point of the spear of this issue, meeting in and meeting out. I know that the department works hard related to having our federal partners recognize and actually follow the MOUs that have been put in place. I'm glad this MOU is under review and you're in the process of updating it and renewing it. And I want to thank Commissioner Guggenhauer for, I know he has spent a lot of time going through and reading those MOUs. And I share his opinion about the need for, one thing is words, another thing is actions. I think putting in the MOUs some evaluative periods every so often during that MOU, say it's a 10-year MOU, during that time period, there's actually a coming together and see if we're actually functioning as the MOU prescribes. And to go to Commissioner Guggenhauer's point about the differences between some of the MOUs, and I understand they're created often at different times, I think the BLM is a good model. That MOU, I think, is a little bit more clear from my perspective about what expectations are. And I think in turn, we especially see with our current relationship with the BLM, probably a stronger adherence to respecting the relationships that exist between the department and these key federal partners. So again, I know the last couple of weeks, the COVID challenges have brought forth a lot about how these relationships function and work. They're instructive to the commission, and I think they're instructive to the department. and helping us look forward and say what are the things that are necessary to ensure, again, that these aren't just pious documents that get put on a shelf, but are actually the rule book of which how we engage each other, how we respect our respective roles, but also a recognition that when it comes to wildlife, that this department, you, the rest of the people that make up our department, are the primary decision makers and resources related to wildlife and its management. And there's nothing more important that any agency, federal or state, recognize that responsibility and recognize who has that responsibility and expertise. So with all that said, as you know, I go back to those 2012 talk about here's language we expect in all of our MOUs. And that brings us forth to today. I'm glad we've done that, obviously, because it sets the table for the conversation that you're having and that you're working on today. So I want to commend the department for being resolute on this. Clay, as I know, works hard at it. So does many other people in the department. But this is an opportunity in the current times we're in and having to have this telephonic video meeting because of a very significant occurrence in our country right now. This also points to why these agreements matter in how decisions are made about how wildlife is managed on these public lands. And so with that, I just want to, again, back up everything Commissioner Guggenhauer is saying and commend the department and ask the department, though, to move forward resolutely in ensuring that these agreements reflect what we need to actually manage the state's wildlife.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, go ahead.
Commissioner Guiler, thank you. Clay, thank you for all the work you've done, and I just want to echo Commissioner Guggenhauer's homework and the comments by Commissioner Davis. The one thing that I would hope that we are keeping first and foremost, given our discussions, Clay, is that reflecting on the timber management going on the Bill Williams Mountain and the way it's affected our turkey habitat, the biologists that are working for the Forest Service and those that are working for the department, even though we think we have a common goal, there's a very different path that each of the agencies is taking. And looking at the habitat requirements, the carrying capacity, and the issues that were needed for our turkey population up on Bill Williams, for example, I would hope that in these discussions, as resolute as we're being, that the department is emphasizing that all of the decisions we are making are based in sound science. And in the past, it seems that the biology departments of our federal counterparts have been more of, for lack of better words, dogs running around and looking at fire hydrants. And there needs to be a team approach there. But more importantly, the feds need to realize that we are the managing agency for our wildlife, and that's what brings us to this table. And the MOU needs to reflect that resolute feel, that resolute attitude in my mind. Thank you. And I appreciate all you've done. Thank you for holding my hand these last few months. But more importantly, thank you for all you're going to do here in the near future. You're appreciated.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, proceed.
Commissioner Guggenhauer, so I wanted to emphasize one more thing. I echo what all the other commissioners are saying here. These 20 active management plans, travel management plans with the U.S. Forest Service, it seems like an extreme amount. And we've been following these for many years. As I said, some of them go back 14 years. It'd be nice if we could get some of those resolved and off the table rather than just going on and on. It seems like month in and month out, it's frustrating that we see so little progress being made on some of those. So as we look at these other actions, I would take a look at that. And as we talk to the Forest Service, maybe there's a way we can reduce the sheer number down and try to get some of these issues resolved. And I know you worked that very hard, Clay, and the rest of your team, but I'd still like to see lower numbers there.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
It's Commissioner Bragg. Obviously, I feel the same way the other commissioners do about the MOU that's already been expressed. But I do have one point that I would like to bring up, and hopefully I could get the support of the other commissioners and to give some direction on what I am about to say. On page 7, under item 13, in my mind, in the MOU, is probably the most important paragraph there is. And that is the one that deals with holding a joint meeting each year attended by the director of departments, et cetera, et cetera. I won't read the whole thing. There is one thing left out that I would like to see added, and I would like the support of the other commissioners if they so see fit. And that is, I would like to see a sentence added to that that says the Forest Service Regional Director and the Arizona Game and Fish Director meet separately and by themselves within 4 weeks after this meeting is proposed to review the MOU and the progress of the MOU has made on a yearly basis, not a five-year, but on a yearly basis. And only after the meeting that has taken place, but not any earlier than 4 weeks, nor do I want it any later than 8 weeks so that the results can be viewed. And I emphasize that I would like the director and the regional forester to meet by themselves to discuss the success of the MOU. And I would like to see that added in, Clay, if the other commissioners agree with that.
Any other comments, commissioners? Mr. Davis?
I don't have any other comments. I think Commissioner Brake brings up a very valuable idea. Again, I'm all for constructive review of how a document, an agreement between parties is functioning. And so I think maybe the only thing, Commissioner Brake, in your recommendation is to let Clay and Ty and the department come back with recommendations of how that constructive review takes place and when, so it lines up with the timelines of their negotiations on the new MOUs and our current MOUs.
I didn't make myself plain. I tried to write this out, and obviously was not able to do it correctly, but that is exactly what I tried to say, Commissioner Davis. The important thing to me was to just have the two meet so they could review it. And the other important thing I felt was to have it at a reasonable time after the joint meeting so that it didn't get put in 6 months to 9 months later where topics could have fallen apart. Not a good way of putting it, but my whole emphasis is to review the MOU on a timely basis a short time after the major meeting is held on a yearly basis. Without that, I think we'll go right back to where we are now with, oh, there is a misunderstanding and poor Clay will be writing up another MOU another 3 years from now because we never really got down to getting the director and the regional forester to meet face to face to say how we are all doing. So the bottom line of it is maybe it might be premature to ask the other commissioners to agree with me on that, but I don't think it's premature for me to ask the director and Clay to see if they can come up with something that meets my desires, which is along the lines that you brought up, Commissioner Davis, in the accountability of this, and I want to see the accountability of it on a yearly basis and not when it goes wrong.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes,
so,
indeed.
Clay, maybe explain the process here. I understand you get a lot of inputs on these MOUs, but eventually this comes back to the commission for approval, correct?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Guggenhauer, typically that would be the case because with the way I presented in September, though, was to allow the department to move forward to work with the AG and then to execute the MOU. I think that if it were the commission's desire, we could bring this back. So not only there would be understanding of what the terms were identified for the respective authorities and the points that the commission has brought up, but also the timelines requested and suggested. I would give an example within our current MOU, is there's no expiration date. More recently, our other MOUs have included language of 10 years with a five-year review or annual reviews to the points that were brought up by Commissioner Brake and Commissioner Davis as well. So I think a long way of saying if the commission requested, then we certainly could bring this back so that the commission could see all the language identified within the MOU and provide them that opportunity before it was executed.
Clay, this is Eric. I think the problem is that we've all, particularly all, realized that letters may be written, but progress doesn't seem to be made on behalf of the Game and Fish Department. We either have a change at the federal level of personnel, or we have differences of opinion, but I think the more contact is probably the better if we can get some kind of a meeting, but progress has certainly been waning at this point.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioners, I just want to kind of wrap up some of what I've heard you say this morning so I make sure I capture it well. In teeing right off of Chairman Sparks' point, the department, at least in the since I've been paying attention, at least in the last 5 years, has seen some successes on a lot of the projects that we've worked on. They may not be as timely as sometimes as we're hoping for, but we've seen the needle shift quite a bit for some of our travel management and even the LRMPs, land and resource management planning actions. It's my personal opinion. I think the constant pressure and the attention, or steady pressure, meaning movement, not any other thing else, of the department and in the commission supporting the department's efforts on that and even directing in cases our engagement has been helpful. And so I don't want that to be lost, at least from my perspective. I know, Commissioner Guggenhauer, you mentioned the 20-something projects. We have seen successes and things that were favorable for the department or our constituents with regards to wildlife management actions and areas that we're able to streamline and improve under good governance for processing things, even as special use permits. So, but then a couple other points I want to make, and so I capture this action specifically to the points that Commissioner Guggenhauer, you brought up, just consistent, explicit, and stated actions that define areas of responsibility. And to Commissioner Davis's points that we have a review of timelines, as an example, 10 years or 5 years thereafter, and then to Commissioner Brake's point of the department to draft some language that the commission would see as well of an annual review of by the director and the regional forester of the terms working within the MOU. And shortly after the annual coordination meeting. And then I think to lastly, Commissioner Guiley, your point regarding some of the work on Bill Williams Mountain. I think that what's critically important in a lot of what the statewide team does, I certainly can't take the credit for it, is because of the MOU having a framework set up that puts the department in position through cooperating agency, whether it's jurisdictional authority or special expertise as biologists, to be sitting in those conversations with the forest for their federal land planning activities so that we can identify what those issues are through the process, even submitting comments, letters, and then also follow up after the fact. And so I think those are the benefit to the MOU provides that, and we'll continue to work through those. Please let me know if I missed anything, but I think I captured most of what was stated at a point level.
Mr. Chairman, Jim Googie and I are here. Clay, yes, we don't want to overlook the progress that has been made, because you're exactly right. We've noticed that, too, that there has been recent progress. We hope that a well-written and agreed-to MOU will continue that good progress into the future. That was my point.
Commissioners, or Chairman Sparks, my point of the review by the directors is not a criticism, but an opportunity to continue working together closer and review that on an annual basis. The Forest Service, in my estimation, I don't want to belabor this point, but there's several forests in Arizona, and they don't always seem to have the same direction, and this has become a problem with other organizations that I deal with. And so having the two directors meet and being able to discuss the good things that are taking place so that the commission and the employees of both organizations see that, I think is a very valid point to have an annual meeting. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Brake, captured those notes here. Certainly can't speak for the director, but it's been my experience that when Director Gray is having those conversations with the regional forester, they're very honest conversations and identifying what any issues lie in and how they can be resolved. So I concur.
Mr. Chairman, to Clay's point, I think it's a good suggestion. I really do. Clay, my question would be, if we wanted to bring this back to the commission before execution, does that cause any time frame problem?
Mr. Chairman, Director Gray, no, I do not believe it does. I think that that would just provide us an opportunity. And to be quite honest, I think that what I would propose doing is outlining, I know, Mr. Director, you would certainly enjoy Gantt charts, but working with the forest to put together a Gantt chart, which would include returning to the commission prior to execution and timeline. And I think that we need to be very reasonable, but also forward-looking on what that would look like.
Thank you, Clay. Mr. Chairman, I think we will take these as action items. My preference would be to return to the commission before execution, just based off this discussion, even though you've given us prior direction, but that would be my preference, so that's how we will handle it.
Thank you. Good.
I think the director likes Gantt charts almost as much as he likes hand sanitizer.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Davis, I think he liked hand sanitizer before it was cool. There's anything else for the commission?
Thanks again, Clay.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Clay. Mr. Chairman, that brings us to our last item, which is the executive session. If the commission wants, we'd need a motion to go into executive session if the commission chooses to do so.
The chairman will make that motion. Let's go into executive session now.
I second by Guggenhauer.
Real quick.
All right. We all need a roll call really quick.
Commissioner Briggs?
Yes.
Commissioner Guggenhauer?
Yes.
Commissioner Geiler?
Yes.
Commissioner Davis?
Yes.
And Chairman Sparks?
Yes.
Okay, so we will be going to the executive session. This is our last item. The commission will come back to adjourn at the end of that.
We're live.
All right, Mr. Vice Chairman, we're back live.
Okay. I want to first thank the department for putting together a meeting under challenging circumstances, and know that it took a lot of extra work to be able to have us on digitally versus in your hair at the office or at another location. So I want to thank everybody for that. I want to thank our legal counsel, too, for, a very in-depth briefing today on a number of issues. They're often unsung heroes because people don't get to hear all the hard work they have to do often. So I want to thank them. And with that, if there's any other commissioner comments, we can entertain a motion to adjourn.
Mr. Vice Chairman, I'd like to make a comment. I'd like to echo what you're saying there. I think the staff to digitally get this meeting up and running and all the work that goes in there, I mean, that cannot be understated. So I also thank them for all the work that they've done there.
This is Chairman Sparks, and I'd like to thank you all also. And I'm sorry I interrupted you, Commissioner.
He's back. You're back in charge. The coup is over.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we're just about ready for a motion to adjourn if there is one.
Commissioner Davis, you want to make the motion?
I'll second. I'll make a motion to adjourn, Mr. Chairman.
I'll second that motion. Ty's going to take it to vote.
Yeah, Commissioner Brake. Commissioner Guggenhauer.
Yes.
Commissioner Geiler.
Yes.
Commissioner Davis. Yes.
Absolutely.
And Chairman Sparks.
Please.
Okay, motion well passes done, 4-0. We are adjourned.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.